You're in the bunker with Daryl.
Good afternoon, John.
Good to be here.
Paul Sullivan today, and Paul Sullivan is my guest. He's actually the author of the book called Clutch, Why Some People Excel Under Pressure and Others Don't. I'd like to welcome Paul to the show. Are you there, Paul?
Daryl, I'm here.
Hey, good having you here.
Good having you here with us, Paul. I'll give a little bit of the listening audience a little quick bio on Paul. And his book, The Wall Street Journal praised Clutch for offering valuable suggestions for what we can do to get through a make-or-break moment with a better chance of success. And the Time magazine called it a well-written examination of what makes our person perform despite stress. Strategy and Business magazine named Clutch one of the best business books of 2010. Paul also writes for the Wealth Matters column for the New York Times. His articles have appeared in Fortune, Condé Nast Portfolio, the International Herald Tribune, Barron's, the Boston Globe, and the Food and Wine. Food and Wine. There you go, Johnny. You can talk to Paul on that one. And then we have from 2000 and 2006, he was a reporter, editor, columnist at the Financial Times. Paul received his degrees in history from Trinity College and the University of Chicago. You know how I like Chicago, Paul.
Got a toddling.
He lives in Stamford, Connecticut, and Naples, Florida. And also probably one of the biggest things, Paul, was working 5 years for me, huh?
That was one of the best jobs I ever had in the pro shop.
It was a good job. I think, how many books did you read over the period of 5 years in there?
Hey, I wouldn't be a writer today if it wasn't for you looking the other way.
That's exactly right. See, he's honest anyway.
Yeah, you got to be honest.
Paul, so how did you come to write Clutch?
Well, yeah, good question. I mean, a couple reasons. I mean, back in 2008, you know, I've been a business journalist for a long time, and I just was looking around at people who were, you know, otherwise smart, successful, they'd risen to the top of their professions, and some of them were doing so great under the pressure that everybody was under back then, and some of them were choking. They were just failing, and I quite simply, I wanted to know why. But I think what even made me receptive to that goes back to, you know, when you and I knew each other. Well, Daryl, when I was working at Wilbraham, you know, years and years and years of planning that course, after a while, I could go around and shoot, you know, 38, 39, 40, and, you know, I got pretty confident thinking, geez, I can play well. And then I'd enter a tournament, enter the Union News tournament, and I'd choke. I'd shoot 85, I'd shoot 90. And so I think that was, you know, I was more receptive than the average person would have been to the idea of being clutch because, you know, at least in my golf game for so many years, I was a choker.
Yeah, I think sometimes also, Paul, it's that if you're doing something repetitive and you get sort of comfortable with a golf course, it's a little easier for you, too.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, you know, when I talk about this, a lot of people, you know, guys with, you know, 2-3 handicaps, but they're playing the same course for, you know, day in, day out, year after year, and, you know, they try to travel somewhere, and they just got a bit too comfortable, and it's not just the pressure, it's just they're not used to, you know, not hitting driver 8-iron on the third hole.
Right, and it's change, right? That's
yeah,
the biggest
absolutely.
Thing. And then tell me a bit about what you found. Any shared traits of the people who are clutch?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I want to do, because, you know, this is a sports show, you know, sports fans all know clutch in that context, but I wanted to take it and apply it to other areas, to law, to business, to family life, to, you know, things that may matter a bit more in the day-to-day level as opposed to whether your favorite team wins. And what I found is that regardless of whether you were, you know, a top attorney, you were running a bank, or, you know, you were a professional golfer or a professional baseball player, those folks all shared 5 traits: focus, discipline, adaptability, being present, and what I call the push and pull of fear and desire.
Well, you gotta elaborate a little bit more on those, Paul. Those are really good.
Well, take focus first. People think, oh, focus, I'm very focused. And I always say that, you know, people get it confused. Concentration and focus are 2 very different things. You know, concentration is you're driving home on a 91 tonight, listen to the radio show, you're concentrating. Focus is you go down to Lime Rock in a Porsche and you're driving 200 miles an hour around the racetrack. And focus under pressure is what sets up all of these other traits, because it makes you realize that, okay, this moment matters more. This moment counts, and I'm going to be able to block everything else out.
Okay, so you're basically getting what you want to call a little bit of that tunnel vision?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, from that, you know, the discipline kind of helps you stay the course. But I often think that, you know, adaptability is that key trait that people forget. And the reason is, you know, we love plans. We fall in love with our plan. We take a lot of time and effort into creating that plan. And then if something happens, we don't want to change it. We want to just stay with what we've done. I mean, think about it on the golf course. You know, how many times you're out there playing and you're playing well, and all of a sudden, you know, you dump it into the bunker. You know, you're right up there by the green. It's a, you know, lousy shot. What do? You can either sit there and say, you know, you start cursing and swearing, I can't believe it hit in the bunker, or you can say, all right, it's just another shot. I've got to adapt. That's a shot I have to hit now. And hopefully, you know, working with Daryl, I've practiced and learned how to, you know, hit a bunker shot, and then it's just one more shot.
There you go.
Hence, that's why we refer to this show as In the Bunker with Daryl Passanella.
You got to be good out of the sand, right, Paul?
Absolutely.
Go ahead, Phil. Let's keep going. We're going to be breaking in probably in about a minute, Paul, but if you get a chance, let's keep going on this. This is great stuff. So being present.
Yeah, being present is, you know, that's, you know, keep it on the golf analogy. I mean, that's a classic, you know, you get up on the first tee and you think everybody's looking at you and you get a little nervous. But it's also, you know, you're having the round of your life. You're on the 16th hole, 17th hole. You think, you know, oh, my God, I could shoot whatever, 85, 75, you know, whatever the round of your life may be. And, you know, You can't start thinking.
That's right. You're not thinking at the present.
More
That's
cars,
right.
I'm going to do it. I mean, I'd love to turn it back to you, Daryl, because I was there, you know, at Wilbraham when you set the record, the old course record. I mean, what were you feeling when you were, you know, coming on those last couple holes?
Well, I'll tell you what. We will discuss that when we get back from the break. Hang in there, Paul.
Now we're talking with Paul.
Paul Sullivan, the author of the book Clutch. We'll be back in a few. We're here with Paul Sullivan, the author of Clutch, Why Some People Excel Under Pressure and Others Don't. Paul, we were talking about before we went to break about me playing back then, huh? Well, the only thing I can tell you is back then in those days when I was playing and the records were there, you're very focused, you're zeroed in, really, but you're not getting ahead of yourself. And to me, I was always looking at one shot at a time and wasn't really looking too much down the road, just trying to play that one hole, and you're like playing one shot at a time. You can't get too far outside yourself because that's exactly what will happen. You'll start thinking too much of what you have to do, and then you won't perform what you have to do.
Yeah, and I remember that summer. You were playing really well, and you know, that was such a key. And in the research for this book, I spent some time, you know, on the PGA Tour with various guys. You know, I sat down with Tiger Woods back in 2008, you know, Jeff Ogilvy, a guy named Matt Goggin, who's on the Nationwide Tour. And, you know, talking to them, but talking to their coaches, it was interesting. I'm sure you do this with a lot of your students now, Daryl, but it was, you know, how much they stressed instilling that, you know, it's just the next shot or that one-shot mentality into the players in practice.
Right.
So, you know, I was at my local driving range last weekend, and, you know, there's a guy next to me. He had two large balls with, you know, 100 balls in it each, and I had a basket with 35 in it. And I'd hit, you know, a driver, then I'd hit a 7-iron, then I'd hit an 8-iron. I moved it around as if I could try in some way to recreate what it'd be like on the course, whereas this poor guy, he was just beating it away. He was, you know, 30 with the driver. And I always think that under pressure, there's no way you can, you know, simulate it exactly. But, you know, if you can practice in some way, and as you guys say, you know, practice as you play, practice in some way so that, you know, every shot counts on the driving range, I think people have a better shot of transferring that onto the golf course.
Right. I think, you know, it's the biggest thing with that is it's the point of the word we really like to use is routine. You like to be able to practice a routine, and it's probably, I'm sure, that if you talk to some of these players as far as your Tiger Woods and everything, is they get in their routine, they focus when they get in their routine, and then nothing distracts them when they're in it. And it's something, again, a routine is something you practice over and over and over again.
Yep. And on a lighter note, at the Players' Championship a couple of years ago, I was standing on the tee with Billy Mayfair, and part of his routine was simply to talk to himself. And I thought, this guy's a head case, but I think he's won 5 or 6 times on the tour.
A lot of guys talk to themselves, Paul. Sometimes the guys we worry about get the answers.
Right.
I don't know whether you remember Al Hrabowski, Paul, from the Cardinals baseball. He was a relief pitcher.
Okay.
The guy was the angry Hungarian, the mad Hungarian.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And the
guy
would be back there talking to himself and snarling and whatnot.
Yeah, the guys at the plate are scared to death.
And Mark Fidrich, another one.
The bird.
Another chatter, you know, talking to himself, staying focused, telling himself what to do.
It's also a way to relieve pressure, too. It's a way to get rid of some tension. I'm sure that everybody has their own little triggers of what they do to get rid of that tension. But if we're talking about, like, in your book, Paul, and some of the things, what do you feel is the most important one?
I do, as we said, you know, before the break, I think it's adaptability, because you can get you can train yourself to focus on that moment, you can stay disciplined, but you know, things are going to go wrong. And in my book, I actually tell the story of adaptability through some military guys. I talked to a guy who won the Navy Cross in Iraq, some Black Ops people out of in the Army, went up to West Point for that. And one of the things I learned, and that really fascinated me by talking to these guys up at West Point, is that, you know, the Army is such a well-run, you know, corporation almost, that they plan and plan and plan. They have, you know, whole groups of people whose job it is to poke holes in their plans. Then they train the guys who are going to be out there executing their plans to know that under attack, under that extreme life and death pressure, chances are that plan is going to fail. So you better damn well adapt. And I love that, you know, I love thinking about what they do, because I think, look, if you're the Army, this massive, you know, organization, if you can adapt that quickly, the rest of us should be able to adapt as well.
Yes. Yeah, that's, I would think on some of those situations that those guys were under a lot more stress than we can ever figure we're under. That's for sure. And, you know, we talk about you know, situations like how about the chokers, Paul?
Yeah, I mean that's you know, the fortunate or the unfortunate part of the book is, you know, you can't have winners without losers, and you can't have people who are clutch without chokers.
Right.
But just as I found that, you know, there are these five key traits for people who are clutch, I found that, you know, people who choke typically have three qualities. I mean, they fail to accept responsibility, they're overconfident, and they overthink their role in, you know, the game, the corporation, you know, life in general. And, you know, the tough part with that is you can often see these traits, you know, far in advance of that crucial moment. But they really come out when people are under pressure, and it kind of dooms them to choking.
Well, you touch on that again, Paul. I mean, that's very interesting. It's like a sense of, don't you feel like some of these guys out on tour, they have to have a sense of confidence?
Well, you know, Jeff Ogilvy, one of the things he told me, I talked to Jeff about, you know, his victory, the U.S. Open victory at Wingfoot in 2006. And, you know, for people who remember it, he had a 10-foot putt on the 18th hole. You know, he hit the second shot short, chips up, has to make this 10-foot putt. And I said, you know, what were you thinking? And he said, you know, I'd be lying to you if I wasn't thinking, I just want this to be over. And I said, you know, were you confident? Were you, you know, what were you? Yeah, he said, you know, I wasn't overconfident. He says, you know, a crazy amount of confidence will doom you. He said, I had a good deal of self-belief. And I thought it's a subtle difference, but there's a subtle difference between sort of belief in yourself and being wildly overconfident. And then I said, well, that's interesting. Then what did you do when you're standing over the putt? And he said, in that moment, I knew that I had made that type of 10-foot putt
hundreds
of times before. And so I went back to, you know, he said it was like remembering a book I'd read 5 years ago. I went back to that. And for a guy like that, he could have missed the putt and he wouldn't have choked. He would have considered it choking if he hadn't, you know, hit it where he wanted to hit it the right speed he wanted to hit it, and, you know, really put a good stroke on it. But it was that self-belief and not that crazy overconfidence that was key for Ogilvy at the Open.
Well, I know that we'll be going to break in a little bit, but I want to talk to you when we get back about the interview with Tiger Woods. That ought to be a good one. And, Paul, while we got you on here real quick, this book is great. Is there a website that people can get your book?
Yeah. They can go to my website. You know, the two versions of it is either clutchthebook.com or pauljsullivan.com. And, of course, you know, it's available on Amazon and BNN.com, all those places.
Excellent. We'll be right back then, Paul, with Paul Sullivan, the author of the book Clutch. We'll be right back.
And you're back in the bunker with Daryl Passanella.
And we're in the bunker here with Paul Sullivan, the author of the book Clutch, Why People Excel Under Pressure and Others Don't. Paul, before we went to the break, we were going to talk about Tiger Woods. Tell us about it.
Woods. Yeah. So when I was, you know, had the idea for this book, as I said early on, you know, back in 2008, I knew I wanted to talk to Tiger. You know, that year, that June at the U.S. Open at Torrey Pines, great victory, incredible clutch performance, you know, the injured leg, you know, wins it on the 19th hole of the 18-hole playoff the next day. And so I set about trying to get an interview with him, which, as you might imagine.
Yeah, it's like hitting a lottery.
Yeah, kind of. It took a bit of time. And but by that fall, it was October, November of that year, 2008, I flew down to Asheville, North Carolina to meet with him. And I had about 20 minutes with him. And, you know, it was, I had to jump through all these hoops to get to him, but, you know, it didn't matter because it was Tiger. We all have to, this is a different Tiger. This is Tiger, you know, at the height of his powers as a great golfer, as a clutch performer.
Right.
And I just knew it was key to get something from him, you know, for the book. And I didn't care about all the hoops I had to jump through. And so I sit down and we start chatting. And, you know, as a journalist, he's what we call a bad interview. He's a bad interview because you ask him a question, a long question, and his answer is yes. And then you ask him another question, and his answer is no. But I finally got him to talk.
I hate that when that happens, Paul.
Well, exactly, yeah, particularly you guys on the radio.
I have done that many times where I feel like a dentist.
Right.
Like, you know, I'm pulling teeth.
Oh. Where are we going with this? But I finally get him to open up about, you know, his ability as a clutch performer, and he says, yeah, I said, Tiger, what is it that makes you so great under pressure? And his first answer, you know, quite honestly, is a bit lame. And he says, you know, I've just been doing it longer than everyone else. And I said, well, you know, come on, Tiger. You know, all these guys have been out there a long time. They're all great. What is it? And he said, well, you know, one of the things is that I failed a lot more than people remember. You know, I was able to go out there on Sundays and lose. And, you know, I started playing, you know, when I was two, been competing since I was five. And, you know, I built it up. And I thought, well, as I left the interview, I said, you know, that's not the greatest series of answers, you know, I'll ever get from this fantastic golfer. But, you know, being someone who's been a journalist for a long time, I know that you can take a few little bits and flame it up into a lot more than it really is. And, you know, Tiger became the first chapter of the book, and, you know, I talked about all of his, you know, his victories. But, you know, in an odd turn of fate, my book was due December 1st, 2009. And, you know, that Thanksgiving, I'm sitting around the house, you know, putting up the Christmas tree. You know, my daughter's just been born, really relaxing. And I look at my BlackBerry, and it says, Tiger Woods in car crash. And I think to myself,
oh, no.
Oh, no. What happened? And then, you know, my wife says, oh, my, you know, geez, I hope he's okay. And I said, yeah, me too. But you know, I'll be honest with you guys, there's a part of me that thinks, you know, I hope he's okay. But if he isn't, you know, if God forbid he's dead, you know, I got one of the last interviews with Tiger Woods. I can dine out on that for years. You know, my 19 minutes becomes an hour, becomes a day, becomes, you know, we played a round of golf together. Well, you know, as you and all the listeners know, it didn't quite turn out that way.
Yeah, there was a different type of choke in that deal.
Yeah, a driver in the back window.
Yeah, Elin put her hands around his throat.
The sandwich in the forehead. You know, for people who pick up the book, Tiger's now the last chapter, not as punishment, but because he became a lot more interesting. And, you know, one of the things I talk about is that none of these guys in the book, and you know, we're obviously talking about the athletes on this show, but there are lots of other folks, none of them were born clutch. None of them were born to be great under pressure. They all became that way. Took a lot of hard work, but it's very attainable. The flip side of that is just because you're clutch in one aspect of your life, you know, maybe you're great as a deadline writer, maybe you're great on as a golfer, it doesn't mean that ability will transfer to other areas.
Right.
And in that sense, Tiger became a lot more interesting to me because, you know, one of the great clutch golfers of all time exhibited in his personal life all of the traits of a choker. So if we think about what I said before, you know, failure to accept responsibility, you know, overconfidence and overthinking. And I thought back to how hard it was to get that 20-minute interview.
Right.
And, you know, I had to have all these interviews with his handlers, all these people who kept him in a bubble, and all these people who prevented him from saying, you know, I have to take responsibility for what happened. I can't make it go away. You know, I can't be overconfident that this will just, you know, blow blow over and nobody will care. And I certainly can't, you know, overthink my importance to golf, to sports, to this country. And that's in so many ways why I believe he choked so badly in his personal life when he had been so great on
right.
the golf course.
Right. Well, I mean, if you're saying like now, you said, you know, appealing to the average guy, what can a golfer listen and take away with him to make him better with your book?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, one of the things we touched on earlier on, I mean, one of the things is the way people practice and, you know, how they go about playing. And by that, I mean, try in some way to simulate the pressure when you're practicing. Not, you know, okay, if I make this shot, I'm going to win $5. That's kind of ridiculous. It's every shot counts. You know, don't hit 10 drivers in a row. Hit a driver, then say, okay, first hole at Franconia, what's my next club? I had to hit a wedge. So work it out that way. So you're kind of in a zone when you're out there where, you know, on the practice range, if you roll the wedge, well, okay, that's just like I rolled it on the course. What's the shot I'm going to have to take next?
And well, isn't it like it's like most of these pros when you hear an interview after they won like a major or anything like that, it's those times when they're back as a kid putting on the putting green, making that three-footer to win the U.S. Open or to win the Masters. I mean, they've rehearsed this since they've been a child, since they picked up the game. And now it comes to reality when they have that opportunity to do it for real.
But they're also very comfortable with not hitting great shots. I mean, Jack Nicklaus once said he shot 68, having hit pretty much every shot that day thin.
Yeah. Well, like you said, it's adaptability, correct?
Exactly. You know, and then the other is that being present. It's, you know, as you were saying earlier, Daryl, it's just that next shot.
Right.
It's not, you know, people forget that. And, you know, that's where it comes into, you know, playing different courses. If you want to be a tournament golfer, if you want to be the guy who plays all the member guests around, if you're only ever playing, you know, Hampden or Wilbraham day after day after day, don't be surprised that when you go to Long Meadow to play in the tournament there that you're not going to play as well. Because you're so used to hitting the same clubs again and again.
That's right. It's
the same
course. You got to change it up. That's right.
Yep.
You know what?
Yep.
And we're going to be back with Paul Sullivan, the author of the book called Clutch, in a few minutes.
Welcome back. You're in the bunker with Daryl Passanella. Daryl.
We got Paul Sullivan, the author of the book called Clutch. Paul, we're talking about a little bit of the book about you talk about like the how can an average person benefit from this book?
Yeah, I mean, we've been having a lot of fun talking about golf, talking about sports, and there's definitely a lot of that in my book. But you know, there's also a lot more because I geared this book toward, you know, the attorneys, the business people, the entrepreneurs, but also, you know, for the parents, for the moms and dads out there, because these traits that are great for, you know, professional golfers also apply to people in every aspect of their life. And, you know, as I say, look, if you play in the member guest, it's great if you're clutch, and you're going to feel pretty awful if you choke, but your life goes on because it's a member guest.
That's
you
right.
want to be able to make these – you want to be able to be great under pressure in the areas that matter the most. You want to be great at work when either something happens and you have to make those decisions, boom, boom, boom. You want to be great when, you know, you get 2-3 kids, they're all screaming at you for something, and you handle it the right way. You also want to instill in them the ability to be great under the pressure that they're going to face in their life. And I think that's where this book, while it has, you know, lots of great sports stories in there, kind of goes beyond that to give people that really practical advice that can help them in their day-to-day life.
Well, what about, you know, talking about golf in a sense, if we can, you know, run through this as quick as you can, what about the mental part of the game?
Yeah, I mean, the mental part, I think, you know, I don't want to, you know, there's lots of been written about it. I don't want to, you know, play it down, but, you know, all of the guys in the PGA Tour are mentally tough, or they would not be there. I mean, they've won at every single level to get there. But, you know, I think where most people, you know, they think, okay, if I can just become mentally tougher, if I can work on my mind, I'll be better. I go the other way and say, look, you have to stay focused. I mean, that's a mental skill. You have to stay disciplined. That's a mental skill. These all the five traits, adaptability, being present, you know, the push and pull of fear and desire, they all have a mental component to them. But if you don't have that set of skills first, if you don't know how to get out of the bunker when you hit into it. No amount of mental preparation is going to make you clutch. And that's where, you know, I say so much of being clutch is the ability to do what you can do under normal circumstances under pressure.
Well, I think what you've been telling everybody here, Paul, is great. And once again, I want to have you tell the people where they can get your book.
Yeah, you can go on Amazon.com, go on BarnesandNoble.com, or you know, go to my website, you know, clutchthebook.com, PaulJSullivan.com. You can buy it right off the website. Go to your local bookseller, enjoy it.
The only thing I could say is if Rory McIlroy read this book before the Masters, I think he'd be 2-0 as far as majors go. Paul, it's a great book. I want to thank you for the book you sent me. Excellent book. Everybody, you got to get his book. It's really an insightful book on everything as far as what we talked about. And, Paul, thanks again. We'll talk to you soon.
Daryl, thanks for having me on. It was fun.
You bet. Thank you. Bye-bye, Paul.